Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Talks today in London about a ceasefire in Ukraine were dealt a blow last night when the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio decided to pull out, with Donald Trump's Ukraine envoy General Keith Kellogg attending instead. This comes as a report in today's Financial Times suggests that Russia might be willing to halt its invasion along current front lines in return for significant concessions. Here to unpack what all of this means is Jeremy Bowen, international editor with BBC News. Good morning, Jeremy. How are you?
Yeah, morning, Philip. I'm very well, thank you.
Quite a few false starts to peace talks now. Is this going to be another one because there's a no-show from Marco Rubio?
Well, the way that some of the participants, the French spokesman was speaking earlier on the BBC, and he said, look, this is a continuation of the meeting you may remember they had about a week ago in Paris. And Marco Rubio, US Secretary of State, was at that as well. And of course, at the end of it, as he was standing by his plane and they were revving the engines ready to go, he said, look, if we don't get some progress on this, I think President Trump might just walk away, might wash his hands of the whole thing. So what can we read into the fact that Mr. Rubio, nor indeed Trump's favorite envoy, Steve Witkoff, will not be there? I mean, I don't think it sounds very positive, does it? Because if they thought they were about to strike some great bargain, they might want to be there to make that particular point. And frankly, it's unrealistic to think that they can get a bargain, I think, in Trump's super rapid time frame.
What does this suggest to you then, that the Russians and the Americans are talking over the heads of the European countries and Ukraine, or that America genuinely is disengaging from this process?
Well, first of all, I think the Europeans, led by the French and the British, have managed to force their way into the process. Britain's Prime Minister Keir Starmer has talked about this coalition of the willing that he's been building up with President Macron of France. Because if you remember, to start with, when the Americans, when Trump came to office and he turned his attention towards Ukraine, I mean, Europe really wasn't going to be part of it at all as far as they were concerned. It was going to be a deal that they did with Moscow. And the Ukrainians weren't necessarily going to be part of it at all. So the Europeans are thinking it's a definite plus that Ukraine is in the conversation, that they're in the conversation. But the kinds of, in the newspapers this morning in London and over in the United States, there have been various hints and leaks about the kinds of things the Americans have got in mind, which appear to essentially boil down to, in return for a ceasefire or a peace deal, it's not quite clear which they're after, the Ukrainians would have to make some pretty serious territorial concessions, one of which, Russian sovereignty over Crimea, they've already ruled out because it's against the Constitution, in return for, well, not a great deal, actually, an end to the fighting, perhaps, at least for the time being, and no American security backstop as far as we know. And I think what this is mostly about from the American point of view is that Trump has, you know, if you remember, Trump madly said that it would be, he could do it in one day. Well, clearly that hasn't happened, but now he's hoping to do it within 100 days, which I think will take it more or less to the end of this week.
This places the European countries in a very invidious position, because if Crimea is a red line for Ukraine and they continue fighting rather than doing a deal because it would involve ceding that territory, well, then Europe has a kind of a critical choice, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Do we continue to support Ukraine in their fight against Russia and thereby cock a snoop at the Americans and their proposal? Or do we row in behind Trump and tell Ukraine, no, this is it?
Yeah, well, I think all the diplomacy since that notorious bust-up in the Oval Office between President Zelensky of Ukraine and Donald Trump and his vice president, J.D. Vance, when, you know, if you may remember, the Americans absolutely browbeat the poor man about Trump saying, you have no cards, you have no cards, you're dealing, you're risking World War III here. I mean, all those notorious phrases that came out since then, The thrust of European diplomacy, led, as I say, by the French and the British, has been to try to put together this coalition of the willing to show that there are alternatives. However, if there was a situation where the Americans, as Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, suggested when they met in Paris a week or so ago, that the Americans say, right, we've tried, it's not going to work, bye-bye, we're off. We got other and better things to think about, like Iran or the Middle East or tariffs, or, I mean, Rubio himself is about to make big cuts in the State Department, and lots of things on their agenda. So where would that leave the Europeans and the Ukrainians? Well, the Ukrainians reckon that they are a lot better at equipping themselves militarily than they were. They are real leaders now in the field, for example, of drone warfare. But the big gaps are in intelligence, which they're getting from the Americans, and also in air defense. Now, can the Europeans fill those gaps? Well, probably not. But, you know, we'll see. And the other thing is, as well, while they've been talking about, I mean, Keir Starmer keeps talking about an ironclad commitment to Ukrainian security. Well, if the Americans aren't around, that also means some ironclad decisions about spending a lot more on defense, which at a time when economically things are very difficult, means some very hard choices.
How do you assess Vladimir Putin's sincerity? History has shown, if you do, more fool you. But might he be calculating this time around in approaching these peace talks that it would be in his longer term interests to give Trump something, to keep Trump on side as this kind of uneasy ally?
Well, yeah, he has been doing a bit of a charm offensive towards Trump. When Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, went to Moscow, and Witkoff is going there again this week, Putin came back and said with great satisfaction, well, President Putin gave me a beautiful portrait of Donald Trump, which he had commissioned from the finest artist in Russia. So that kind of flattery and charm offensive has been continuing, and actually I think the Americans, led by Trump of course, have made it very clear that their priority is not actually Ukrainian security or indeed European security. It's America's potential rapprochement, for not just for business reasons but also for strategic reasons, with the Russians. Trump believes that the way that the world should be run is by powerful men from big countries getting together and sorting things out between them. And, as you know, in his mental universe, that doesn't include Ukraine, and it doesn't really include Britain and the European Union either. So I think that, yeah, Putin is trying to keep him sweet, but equally, he has been very consistent over the years in what he wants. He's written about it. He's spoken about it. He has said that essentially Ukraine is an artificial construct, that really it should be part of Russia. And that's why Zelensky and the Ukrainians believe and say, and have said many times, that they are fighting for existential reasons, that if they want to be independent and sovereign, they're going to have to fight this war. And that's why they've continued, despite some, you know, very, very difficult and dangerous times. And I think that, in a sense, is the equation at the heart of this process, which is they want such different things. It isn't a question, as Donald Trump and his acolytes want to present it as a real estate deal where, you know, the prize on the table is this large country in Europe, Ukraine, and Russia gets a bit and the Ukrainians get a bit. It's about a lot more than that.
This all is the backdrop, if you like, to a fascinating game of three-dimensional chess going on here, because while these talks, while this war continues, Europe has come to the realization that it needs to reorganize its defense and its military-industrial strategy in a way that weans Europe off America without antagonizing America. Is that a conversation that you hear going on in the corridors of power?
Well, yeah. I mean, they've made it not just in the corridors of power, but in public speeches as well. They have actually admitted something which has been screamingly obvious for a very long time, that Trump's got a point when he says that European countries have been freeloading security terms off the back of the Americans for way too long. It wasn't Trump who started this. I mean, there are documents being released by the Americans, which have President Eisenhower in the late 1950s saying very different things, because essentially America had this security commitment. And actually, they weren't there because they wanted to help out the Europeans. They were there because they felt it was important for America to be in Europe, to face off, first of all, against the USSR in the long ago days of the Soviet Union, and more recently in terms of their position as a global power. So they weren't doing it as a favor. And the way and the international system that was constructed since World War II has been something that has benefited America enormously, which Trump is going around, well, basically dynamiting at the moment, or trying to. But I think, yeah, it's a fair point that the Europeans have been able to not spend a great deal of money on defence compared to the size of their economies because of this, and led by the Poles particularly, and the Baltic republics, Latvia, Estonia and Lithuania. They have realized that they're going to have to spend a lot more. And I interviewed the Polish president actually back in, well, beginning of March, I think it was. And he said to me, look, the closer you live to Russia, the more you realize that you have to be well-armed to deter them, to you know, you've got to keep, be strong to have peace. And the further you go away from Russia, the less you realize that. And of course, in the UK and Ireland, we are, you know, we're on our islands in the sea, a long way from Russia. So by that stretch of imagination and argument, we haven't really quite clicked on this yet.
I haven't grappled with it at all. No, it does make Charles de Gaulle look very wise when he said back in the late 60s, America is an ally for now. Jeremy Bowen, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Always a pleasure.